Hecate of the Rhodes, lovely dame, of earthly, watery, and celestial frame, sepulchral in saffron, veil arrayed, pleased with dark ghosts who wander through the shade, Persian huntress, world's key-bearer, we hail. On the rough rock to wander thee delights, leader and nurse, be present to our rights. Propitious grant our just desires success, accept our homage, and the incense bless. Guide our fortunes, gift us with your grace. Daughter of Persis, mistress of silence, goddess of moon and clairvoyance, wander of the wilds, ever leading, dogs and deer and tides receding. Please hear our prayers. Help us to be wise. Hello, everyone. I'm Megan Sullivan, and welcome to History and Games, a podcast that celebrates the educational power of video games by finding the real history hidden inside our favorite games. In my last Hades video, I answered the question, who is Melanoi? But that led to another question. Who the heck is Hecate? It's a good question, and I'm excited to share the story of Hecate with you all. Now, most people think of Hecate as a Greek goddess of ghosts and witchcraft, but this is a misunderstanding of who and what Hecate is. In ancient Greece, Hecate was the goddess of liminal spaces, of boundaries. So let's talk about that. As is appropriate for a seemingly ghostly goddess, Hecate's early history is obscured by the swirling fog of time, forcing historians to squint when trying to make out her place of origin. One scholastic faction claims it can see the outline of Egypt in the chronic mist, and believes that Hecate sprang from either Heka, the Egyptian god of magic and creativity, or Heket, a magical fertility goddess often depicted with the head of a frog. This ancient amphibian art, by the way, likely represents one of our earliest connections between frogs and magic. Meanwhile, a second group of scholars has caught glimpses of the arid plateau of Asia Minor and believes Hecate is a variant of either the mysterious Hittite sun goddess of the earth, known for her ability to open the gates of the underworld, or some other Greek goddess of Anatolia. Wherever she came from, Hecate's cult began to take root and flourish, particularly in Caria, southwest Turkey, where she may have played a pivotal role in guarding cities. Her statues were likely placed in front of gates and entranceways, with the hopes of shielding the people within while keeping enemies, both the corporal and spiritual kind, out. Since gates and doors could be locked and unlocked to deny or grant access to a particular space, the key became one of Hecate's most enduring and significant emblems. Her powers as a liminal goddess must have been impressive indeed, because it wasn't long after her cult arrived in Greece, appropriately at the threshold of two revolutionary epochs, the Bronze Age and the Iron Age, that she managed to firmly ensconce herself in the local pantheon, though in more of a supporting role in which she shared her liminal duties with Hermes. However, unlike the messenger god who juggled a number of vocations, as well as acting as a psychopomp for souls, he was a god of commerce, thieves, travelers, and heralds, Hecate remained steadfast in her role as shield maiden of boundaries. She was especially associated with a thin, ethereal line between life and death that every mortal was forced to one day cross. We first catch sight of this belief in the Homeric hymn to Demeter from the late 7th or early 6th century BCE, where Hecate is portrayed first as a torch-wielding guide of the chthonic grain goddess Demeter during the search for the goddess's kidnapped daughter Persephone, and then as a guide and companion of Persephone during her annual trips to and from the underworld. For her role as faithful escort to both divine mother and daughter, Hecate earned a place in the Eleusinian Mysteries, a popular mystery cult which promised initiates a happy afterlife via a series of secret rites that may have involved reenacting Persephone's journey to and from the underworld. Along with, or perhaps due to, her duties as Platonian chaperone, Hecate also became the mistress of ghosts. Ghosts were liminal beings who belonged to neither the realm of the living nor the realm of the dead. They therefore hovered unhappily between worlds, haunting doorways and crossroads, the very spaces Hecate had domain over. It's not surprising then that Hecate became their caretaker, guiding phantoms through the darkness with her torches while black bitches loped alongside her. It was in the hopes that Hecate would keep this restless band of spirits from attacking the living that the Greeks left offerings at crossroads, which formed a liminal junction, during the new moon, an intermediate period that marked the transition from one moon to the next. These offerings were placed in front of Hecate's statue, which, starting in the classical era, was portrayed as triple-formed to represent the place where three roads met. Despite her connection to the eerie spirit realm, Hecate was often hailed as a benefactress, her boundary-protecting statues thwarted evil, while archaic art suggests she was thought to act as a nocturnal guide for wedding processions. Hecate was also called upon by women all over Greece to help them through the difficult and dangerous birthing process, a transitional moment for both baby and mother. Since her duties as divine midwife overlapped with the local Bronze Age goddess Artemis, it wasn't long before the two became conflated. They became so closely linked, in fact, that by the 5th century BCE, the two were sometimes referred to as Artemis Hecate. And in later centuries, when Artemis herself became conflated with the lunar deity Selene, or Selene, people began to worship these goddesses in a single form known as Artemis Selene Hecate. Like all gods, though, Hecate had a darker aspect. As mistress of spiritual and physical boundaries, some feared an angry Hecate could remove the guardrails between the living and the dead, assailing victims with terrifying nightmares, or worse, sending hateful ghosts to attack them. Female spirits known as Empusa were especially dangerous on account of their envious need to attack young girls before they had the chance to marry. Since these deadly damsels were categorized as especially unhappy ghosts, they fell under the care and control of Hecate, and thus over time came to represent an aspect of Hecate. It was therefore important to propitiate the ghostly goddess not just in her original form or in the guise of Artemis Hecate, but also in the form of a dying maiden, namely ones like Hecate Iphigenia. You may recall Iphigenia as a princess who was sacrificed by her father Agamemnon in the Iliad in order to appease the goddess Artemis. Since Artemis and Hecate are closely associated, it's not surprising that Iphigenia also became associated with Hecate. Hecate's ability to control the restless dead was reason enough for most people to be wary of her, though some intrepid spellcasters saw Hecate as a helpful medium when practicing the magical arts. Magic was closely associated with the dead in ancient Greece, and it was common to call upon chthonic deities to help cast magical spells. These spells usually involved trying to shanghai a ghost into cursing someone or making an individual fall in love. As a guide and caretaker of spirits, it was Hecate who was often invoked to help access this nocturnal labor force. Sometimes she was even personally invoked to cast a spell or place a curse. In other words, she wasn't really a goddess of witchcraft, but her association with ghosts led people to appeal to her for help when casting magic. By the 5th century BCE, this practice was common enough that in his tragedy Medea, Euripides was able to effortlessly cast Hecate in the role of patron goddess to Medea, the witchy wife of the hero Jason. Yet even as some Greeks hyper-focused on her scarier qualities, her torchlight continued to offer hope to many, particularly the initiates of mystery religions, where she played guide and guardian to those hoping for a happy transition into the afterlife. In fact, she was so important in her role as divine chaperone that the Orphic hymns open with a plea to Hecate, the one I read at the beginning of this episode, to guide worshippers safely through the initiation process. Her popularity grew even more starting in the Hellenistic era, though admittedly, it's at this point Hecate's narrative arc becomes hard to follow. After the forced unification of Greece by Philip of Macedon and the conquest of the Persian Empire by his rather capable son Alexander, the Greeks were suddenly and dramatically exposed to a bevy of new local and foreign cults, all of which had their own ensemble of impressive gods. It was at this exciting cultural junction, again, junction appropriate for Hecate, that the Greeks, ever pros at syncretism, in which they absorbed the beliefs and practices of foreign religions with their own native beliefs, began to blend their different local pantheons with those of places like Egypt, Anatolia, and Mesopotamia. Gods like Hermes now absorbed the traits of gods like Thoth or Thoth, the Egyptian god of knowledge, writing, and science, among other things, and sported hyphenated cognomen like Hermes Trismegistus. Hecate was no exception to this rule, and her cult now sprung off in different directions. Along with her original association with goddesses like Demeter, Persephone, and Artemis, Hecate also became associated with other Greek goddesses like the Theban goddess Enodia, and a variety of minor birth goddesses. On top of that, Hecate was also associated with several foreign deities, including the Egyptian deity Isis, the Thracian goddess Bendis, and Eriskigal, a Sumerian goddess of the underworld. By the time Rome entered the chat, a dizzying amount of spiritual and philosophical beliefs were in place in and around the Mediterranean, and Hecate had pride of place in more than one of them. As a goddess closely associated with magic, she was particularly important to cults that dealt in the arcane, as attested to by the Greek magical papyri, a collection of spell fragments that range from the 1st century BCE to the 5th century CE. By the time these spells were written down, hypersyncretism was in full swing in the Greco-Roman world, and Hecate was invoked by the names of several associated goddesses, including Artemis, Persephone, and Theone, a titaness of water whose name in late antiquity was often applied to her daughter Aphrodite. Now let's think back to my previous video on Hades too. Remember that the names Artemis, Persephone, and Theone, alongside Melanoi, are the same goddesses invoked on magical bronze tablets that date to late antiquity. Since all of these goddesses are closely associated with Hecate, the thought is that instead of invoking multiple goddesses at once, it could be the bronze tablets are invoking different aspects of the same goddess, Hecate. Now, in my last video, it wasn't quite clear what exactly these tablets were meant to do. Obviously, they were used in some sort of ritual, but what kind? Well, I think I have the answer now, but before we get to that, we need to take a closer look at the last cult Hecate was associated with in late antiquity, and it was a pretty influential one, and that religion is Neoplatonism. Founded in the 3rd century CE, the tradition known as Neoplatonism combined a perplexing blend of philosophical ideas with Gnostic beliefs found in texts like the Chaldean oracles, which were written down sometime in the 2nd century CE. It is a difficult religion to explain. Many of its tenets read like a word salad, but in its most basic form, it was centered on the belief that the universe was the idea of a great intellectual mind, and that a being known as a cosmic soul turned the ideas of the mind into reality. In Neoplatonic dogma, the role of the cosmic soul and mediator between mortals of the material world and the realm of the intellect was played by none other than the liminal goddess par excellence, Hecate. Up until now, Hecate had, appropriately enough, occupied the borders of Greek religion, but it was in this unique denomination that she took center stage. In lieu of being a subterranean goddess who hung out with ghosts, Hecate now became a celestial creatrix and gatekeeper of the material, spiritual, and intellectual worlds. She was also a divine mediator and savior, one who could help instruct mortals on how to successfully pass from the material world to that of the intellectual realm when they died. For her role as divine messenger and guide, she was called Hecate Sotera, or Hecate the Savior. In order to call upon Hecate Sotera and receive her divine guidance, a special priest known as a thaumaturge was required to perform a magical ritual. Unsurprisingly, these magical rituals involved magical objects, and the magical bronze tablets invoking Hecate are likely an example of that. Now, there's no way to prove that these tablets are directly linked to Neoplatonism, but it makes sense. The three bronze tablets were found in the Neoplatonic cult centers of Pergamon, Sardis, and Apamea, and come from the right era, which is late antiquity, the 3rd century CE to be exact. And again, they're very magical. Esoteric writing hems the edges of the tablets, a sphere shape in the center possibly represents the moon, which was considered magical in ancient times and is the sphere that Hecate Sotera occupies in Neoplatonic belief, and the names of goddesses, who have crescent moons above their heads, are closely associated with Hecate. In short, we're likely dealing with something Neoplatonic. At any rate, Hecate remained popular until the end of antiquity. But with the rise of the church, Hecate and her fellow gods were left on the sidelines. All people seemed to remember about her was her association with magic and witchcraft, so much so that Hecate became the patron goddess of the three witches in Shakespeare's Macbeth. But that's not really who Hecate is. She's a goddess of boundaries and transitions. She's a protector and a guide. And I'm happy to report that this is the exact role that Hecate plays in Hades too. a guide, friend, and mentor. And that's it for this episode of History and Games. Questions, comments, suggestions, reach out to me at meghistory@gmail.com. And if you can, I'd love your support on Patreon at Megan R. Sullivan. Thank you so much for supporting History and Games, everyone. I truly appreciate it. See you later.